Welcome to the Coaching DNA Podcast. I'm your host, Travis Wyckoff. I'm also the founder of Kingdom Coaching, my consulting business in which I coach leaders. This week is part two of my conversation with Jennifer Petrie. Jennifer is the head volleyball coach at the University of San Diego. Jennifer has built a great program at San Diego over her 24 seasons there. This past fall, she led her team to the Final Four and was named AVCA National Coach of the Year. During part two of our conversation, Jennifer and I talk about her leadership council, handling expectations, leading her coaching staff, and much, much more. So without further ado, my conversation with Jennifer Petrie.
Okay, so walk me through, thanks for sharing that. That gives me good insight into your spring. Walk me through in August when everybody, like the team that you're going in that fall with, so you bring in the newcomers, and then you've got the returners. How do you start building culture day one in the summer? What does that look like? Do you do any exercises that are different? Yeah, maybe give us, how do you start team building and culture building for that fall?
For that next fall.
Yeah.
That's a really good question because, I really feel like starting in January is the most important part of your culture building, but then you're adding, you know, 4, 5, 6 new people into this culture that they have no idea what you're talking about, right? And so we have a council that that the girls vote on. It's a culture council, and their job is, one of our big pillars is to protect the team. That's their job. And they do a lot of, they learn how to onboard the newcomers to the program. Since we don't have the access to them in the summer, they're really responsible for acclimating them and getting them aware of like how we operate, what's the terminology we use, how we push each other. They have the ability, we spend a lot of time with the council teaching and giving them the power to have a circle, what we call circle conversation within our team, where everybody has a voice. Everybody knows that they can go to the council if they have a concern, if they feel like there's something awry, if they feel like, you know, maybe, you know, we can work harder in this area. Not everybody's on board on the same page. How can we address this? And so it's the council's job to go in and learn how to resolve conflict, for one, learn how to, when to involve the coaches in areas that they think, you know, this is too big for just us. We need to, you know, bring it to any of our coaches. So their job really is to get those girls ready for August. Cause then when August comes and we can step in, you know, those pillars have already been worked on for 6 months. And we will speak of them every day in practice and point out, that's what it looks like to stay brave, or that's what it looks like to protect the team. You know, somebody came up and, somebody was going to be late to practice, and somebody got on the phone to make sure that kid was not going to, you know, all the non-negotiables that we have on the board are being accounted for.
Yeah. So the culture council is in place starting in the spring. You'll vote for it here soon.
We did. Yeah.
You already got it. Mm-hmm. How many are on the council?
There are 3 on the council.
All the time or just this year?
Usually 3, only 3. And, you know, they're all different ages. We'd like to have somebody in the freshman class after being here now in the spring. There's a freshman on the council. There's a senior. There's a sophomore. It doesn't matter if you start, don't start. Your teammates have voted you into that position because they feel like you're trustworthy. You know, you can hold people's confidence. You're approachable. You're easy to talk to. And there's no judgment ever on any of the conversation that you have.
So have you ever had a situation where the votes come in and the top 3 vote getters and one of them you're like, I don't see it. And then if you have, what do you do?
Well, I should preface it by saying that once you're on the council, you're on it like for your entire career. You're not off. We're just replacing from the bottom. So it doesn't really, that doesn't really happen that often because usually it's a freshman, somebody young that's now joining the council.
Yep. Because a senior left.
Yes.
Opened a spot up. Okay.
Yeah.
Yep. I'm going to keep poking around on that a little bit.
Sure.
Have you had a situation where somebody's in the council and for whatever reason, they just, it's just not a good fit. And if so, what'd you do in that situation?
I would never say that I don't think that they were a good fit. And I don't think I've had that situation because I think that with the power of the three of them, that some might have strengths that the others don't. There's a reason why they were selected because we really spend a lot of time talking about the attributes that the team wants in that person. And I think the team knows better than I do, you know, what that person can bring in these situations, whether it, you know, the grace that they have, or like I said, their openness, you know, the way they treat others. So I haven't really run into that problem.
Yeah. And how often do you meet with your culture council?
We meet, you know, I probably will be at least in touch with them, you know, once a week. And then I just let them, you know, run their own show unless there's something that I need to be aware of.
Yeah.
In the spring, we'll meet just to make sure that they understand what their responsibilities are. And really the biggest thing is to let them know, I'm like, you're not in charge of, you know, team functions and team bonding experiences. You're not disciplinarians. Nobody's asking you to, you know, have judgment on these kids. You're just there to, you know, to make sure that they have a somebody they can speak with and a voice, and then to hold these conversations with the team and to make sure that you identify, or the three of you see, oh, so-and-so looks like they had a hard day at practice today. Maybe we should go and approach her and see, you know, if she's okay. Instead of feeling like, oh, one person is responsible for all of that.
Yeah. And do you, let's say in the fall during the season, will you ever call them in and just to get a pulse on the team? How are you doing? What's going on?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's probably one of the most valuable pieces of having them just have a good idea of where people are at. Well, and that's a battery check, right? Well, where is your battery at? Are you guys, you know, can we push you harder? Do we need to take a day off? How are we feeling right now? You know, what's the energy like? Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. I want to pivot into staff. Obviously, I think you'd mentioned you went 20 some years with the same staff, and you've had, for good reasons, have had staff turnover the last 5 or 6 years. You'd mentioned, I wanted to dive into hiring, but I think you answered my question as far as you're going to reach out to people. You're going to use your network.
Yeah,
for sure. So let's talk about staff management. You get, you know, your staff together. Is it more organic when you guys meet? Do you have a consistent meeting where we meet every single Monday and we map out the week? What's your rhythms like on meeting with and communicating with your assistants?
I think during the season, we will meet every Monday. Just to make sure that we know what we're tackling that week and that everybody is, you know, I have them actually send me, you know, this is on my plate this week. This is what I'm planning to accomplish. So I can see, all right, where is everybody at right now? Are there things that I need this week specifically done? In the spring, it's a little more organic and right now, I mean, clearly anytime you hire somebody new, there's a lot of conversation going on, right? And, a lot of collaboration. So I'm doing that. Spending a lot of time with that right now. Everybody has their lanes that they run in, which I think is really helpful to be really clear on what your roles and responsibilities are in your staff.
So when Carlos comes on, do you have like a document or a multi-page document that you can hand to him, kind of an onboarding type, here's a roadmap, or is it very organic? We just kind of talk through things.
you know, thanks to COVID, I suppose this one of the silver linings, we created this giant handbook, right? For drills and how we, you know, how we train and the culture, all of that. So we do have that. But you know, things change too. And the way that you want that, you know, together, I'm like constantly willing to be open enough to blend, because, you know, you never want to be stagnant in your learning and feel like, okay, you know, what does this person's voice sound like? And how do they want to run the gym? And it's important to give them the onus of being able to be themselves.
Yeah. What do you find in general, not necessarily with your staff now, but in general, what has been your biggest challenges when it comes to just leading and managing the staff?
I think probably just letting go, right? That's always the challenge. And if you're going to empower somebody to do something, you have to let them do it their way. And I think that probably anybody that's in a leadership position it feels like their way is the best way, and they're very controlling. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that in my life, you know, I'm controlling in my household. My husband would be like, okay, can you just let go of that for a little while? Like, I can do it whichever way, it's going to be done. And it's all going to be done, you know, at the end, the same way. It's just a different process of getting to the end. Right. So letting people do things in their own way is, something that I've learned over the time.
Yeah. Look, back to self-awareness for a second. I'm curious, as you share that, I'd be curious if we had like a scale, 10 is really high, 1 is really low, but, you know, let me rephrase it. We have a scale. 10 is like super intense. Like you are, like you're always on. 1 is you're just really, really laid back. Where are you at? You can't say 5. Where are you at on the intense to late on the laid back scale?
I think it would probably depend on what you're talking about, because I'm a 10 for sure in a lot of areas, right? But, you know, in some ways I'm like, okay, you know, some people are like, I'm so sorry that it happened that way. I'm like, that's okay. You know, we're going to learn from that and we're going to move on. So I don't want people to feel like I'm so intense that, you know, they can't come to me with, you know, a stumbling block, something happened, you know, because I think that that's a mistake when people, you feel like you're holding people accountable to a level that they can't actually achieve all the time. You have to have some grace in there for times when you do trip and you do stumble. And college athletes, that's going to happen a lot, right? And that's different than your staff. But I think my staff would say that I'm probably like a 7, right? If you want, you know, a 5 is the medium.
Yeah.
I'm intense and I like things done the right way. And I think integrity is really important. Communication is really important. And how we represent, you know, not only ourselves, our program and the university is really important.
Okay. So love that. You're at a 7. When you're in the gym, is it still a 7, or is that, you mentioned a couple things, I'm on a 10. When you're in the gym, when you're, you know, practicing from 3 to 5 or whenever you practice, what do you like then?
I think then I'm extremely passionate about what we're doing in the gym. And a lot of our practice is based on competing in some aspect, whether it be you're keeping score or not. I'm like, you can be competing against yourself, right? In your next rep, whatever it is. And so for them to know that every contact they make, every rep they take is very intentional in being able to compete with yesterday's reps. Yeah. Or compete with the person that is, you know, playing in your position, whatever it is. So I think it's really important to stay. You have to, I mean, obviously you can't ride on a 10 all the time, but you have to be in a place where you're always trying to get the most or outdo your previous rep.
Yeah. Yeah. Very good. When did you, was there a point or was there a season where you felt like you really got even more, you really felt like, okay, I know my voice as a coach, I'm feeling more comfortable in my own skin. Yeah. Was there my experience is when we start coaching, we have we have these influences, and you kind of look at the influences that were big influences and key influences. And you probably kind of, I did anyways, when I coached college baseball, where I kind of tried to be like one of my pitching coach in college. And then I remember a seminal moment where I'm like, man, I'm not Brent. I got to stop being Brent. I got to be myself. And then it took me a little bit longer to figure out like exactly who I am, what my voice is. Do you remember a period of time where you really got comfortable with, okay, I think I found my voice?
I think it definitely was, after I had two of my children, and just feeling like I am at a place now that I feel like I can manage it all. Because when you're in the midst of having a young family, I mean, you feel like you are failing in a lot of areas because it's so hard to feel like you're winning at everything all the time. But once you get the hang of it and you give yourself some grace to realize, okay, you're not going to be 100% mom, coach, spouse, friend, daughter, all of these things at once. I think that's when I started to just relax a little more and enjoy the process.
Yeah, very good. Okay, I end with three questions. The first one I ask is, what are you currently reading or listening to that keeps you sharp, that keeps you growing?
Jocko Willink.
Willink, yeah.
He is so fascinating to me. And I was just listening to one of his podcasts that was recommended to me. And it was about the word good. Have you heard that?
I have. Yeah. When something goes bad, good.
Yes. Good. Yeah. Good. You didn't get the raise. Good. You didn't win that match. Good. Like I listened to that this spring, and I just feel like going forward for this season, I'm like, okay, I'm ready to just take it in and feel like, okay, this is good. It's good that we're going to have this challenge in front of us right now. And nobody expects anything to become of us. You know, we graduated 16 years. Good.
Yeah. Love that.
So anyway, I have been listening to that. I always love to read The Power of Who. Legacy is probably one of my favorites. Just staying humble with what you do and making sure that the team knows that, nobody is above the process. I love all of the chapters in that book about sweep the sheds and leave the jersey better than how you found it. Just really being grateful for the opportunity that we have.
Yeah. So I'm going to take a side note real quick before I go to my second question. It sounds like one of the ways that you're going to deal with expectations is this idea of good. How have you in the past dealt with expectations? How have you maybe for lack of a better term, like how have you like stripped that burden of expectation off so you can still coach, you can still have joy coaching? Yeah. How have you dealt with expectations?
Right. I think that in the past, I mean, I think most certainly we have raised the bar to a space now at San Diego that is unprecedented. I mean, and so the expectation now has gotten grander than it's been in the past. I mean, we've been an underdog. We've always been able to take on this immense schedule because we believed in ourselves and nobody else had to, right? And so we were constantly just, chomping at the bit to get out there. Now we're in a place like where, I don't know if people are waiting to see what we're going to be or who we're going to be or how we're going to reinvent this wheel, but the expectations have gotten bigger. And so that, like I said, the good has been really helpful this spring. In the past, we've always talked about raising that bar and getting better. We were in the Sweet 16 a few years, how we were going to open up, break that ceiling. And now that we have that expectation is pretty grand.
Yeah. It's interesting, just as the leaders I've worked with and been around primarily baseball, it's, when you're building, there's the quote unquote stress or pressure to elevate. And then when you get there, it's like that weight leaves, but a whole nother weight comes on, oftentimes heavier than the weight of getting there. And I have actually seen it, like, for lack of a better term, this might be a little strong in some cases, but it can crush the leader when the expectations become, and all of a sudden they become almost neurotic and just anxious constantly and constantly pushing. And it can be, I've just seen that it's like, no matter where you're at in your career, managing your stress levels, managing the anxiety, managing the expectations are so critical.
The sustaining of excellence is so challenging.
Yep.
It really is. And mentally, it can take a toll for sure in your confidence. So I'm excited about the opportunity that we have ahead of us to, you know, just take that attitude of, hey, you know what? We graduated six. Let's see what we can do now, because now is our opportunity to shine. So
yeah. Love that. Love that. Okay. Second question I ask is, what advice would you give a young female just getting into the coaching profession?
I think, two things. One, they said, surround yourself with people that do things better. Like, find out those people out there. Lean again on who you know and pick their brains. Go and talk to them, because I feel like, and one of the things that I was reading and really took to heart, we discussed, is who you know wants to help. Mm-hmm. I think so many people, you don't want to reach out to people because you feel like, they don't have time for me, or that's awkward, or why would I, you know, lean on her to help me. Everybody wants to help.
Yeah.
Like, I would 100% help anybody out there that wanted to, you know, give me a call and just say, hey, let's just shoot the breeze. I want to pick your brain. But everybody hesitates to make that phone call. I don't want to call you, Travis, and find out. I'm sure you're busy. Why, you know, What time do you have for me? So I think just realizing that you have a lot of resources out there. You just have to trust in yourself to use them.
I love that. So good. All right. And the last question, I'll end with this. Who would you love to hear somebody walk through their journey, talk about how they build culture, how they manage their staff? Yeah. Who would you like to hear all things leadership?
Well, two people obviously that I think would be really interesting to me, because both Brent Hilliard and Alfred Reft are now, and Marie Zydek for that matter, heads of their own programs, and what they've done to, in their first head coaching jobs, to develop a new culture after being within a culture that, you know, they might take some things from, or they might say, I'm never going to do it that way again. Because every experience, you know, gives you, whether good or bad, is going to give you the opportunity to mold yourself into what you want to be.
Yeah. And so where's Brent at now?
Brent's at San Diego State.
San Diego State. And Alfred's at UCLA, you said?
Yeah.
And who is the third person you mentioned?
Marie Zydek. She's the head coach at DePaul.
DePaul. That's right. Very good. Well, Jennifer, thanks again for taking time. This has been awesome.
Thanks, Travis.